John McEnroe has stepped in it again. This past Sunday, he told NPR's Lulu Garcia-Navarro that Serena Williams was the best female tennis player in the world, to which Lulu responded, "Why say female?" To which McEnroe responded, "Well, if she played the men's circuit, she'd be like 700 in the world." Kaboom, the exchange that launched 1,000 headlines and tweets from the very pregnant Serena Williams. I'm paraphrasing here. She said, "Dear John, I adore you. Shut up." Well, that's not likely to happen. Now, Serena herself once told David Letterman if she had to play tennis great Andy Murray, she'd lose. The men's game is a completely different sport. But this kerfuffle is another reminder of why people have a love-hate relationship with John McEnroe. His new memoir is But Seriously, We Spoke Before Serena Gate, and started with that contrast. McEnroe is winner of 7 Grand Slam singles titles. He's now the calm, measured commentator and father of 6 who sobbed when the family poodle died. But how did Sports Illustrated put it? Also a bullying, tactless, clueless, selfish jerk.
Well, that's quite an intro. I think I'm somewhere in the middle of that horrible quote you read in Sports Illustrated and the one where I'm Mr. Calm.
Well, okay, disclosure here. I live with a tennis player. The thing he wanted to know is, you are this measured, reasoned commentator. Where was that person when you were on the tennis circuit? What happened there?
It's like being a backseat driver, I guess, being a commentator. You can sort of sit back and say what everyone did wrong. Like, you should have done this here. But when you have a lot less time to think about it, and it's a lot hotter, and there's split-second decisions, and you could be exposed, and maybe you're not playing so well, and you think people are cheating you, and people are booing you and calling you a bum, you jerk. It's for me, it was virtually impossible to keep cool. And where I grew up in New York, if someone called you a name, you'd sort of call them a name back, and people were taken aback by that, particularly in England when I first went there.
I think it was your first Wimbledon and you were booed, and you kind of thought, well, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, I tried to snap my racket underneath my foot, which they didn't seem to like a whole lot, but I thought it was funny. I actually kicked my racket to the sideline just to see what the reaction was. And it's the first time I remember ever being booed on a tennis court. It's not that I liked it. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I like being booed, but I like the energy that it brought, and it brought an intensity.
But you wrote later that you realized that losing your cool helped you stay focused, but then at some point in your career, it got away from you. I mean, you write about the 1990 Australian Open. You were thrown out for audible obscenities. You seem to be saying there, at a certain point, you start to lose control of this thing that had given you focus.
Yeah, I think I would compare it to someone who's a cigarette smoker. I mean, the addiction becomes, you don't like it. I mean, you might convince yourself at one stage, maybe some of these kids, oh, I'll never get addicted to cigarette smoke. It's just something I'll do briefly. It looks cool. And for a while, as far as what I was doing on the court, when I started questioning line calls and going a bit crazy, I did feel most of the time it helped me. It did hurt me in a couple of big matches. But for the most part, that's what I brought to the table, that will, the drive. It wasn't like they'd look at me and go, look, there's a guy who's 6'5 and got a lot of big muscles. I mean, I wasn't going to blow people off the court. Later on, particularly when I had kids, I realized that some of the things that I was saying, I was going over the line. My dad, my late dad, was managing me and taking care of me, obviously, not only as professionally, but also as a father. He said, hey, listen, you don't need to do this stuff. You're better than these. Of course, he'd always say, like, you don't need to do this. You're better than them. He'd get all excited. But he said, but if you are going to do that, just don't curse at them. That's sort of where you cannot be serious and you're the pits of the world and you're an incompetent fool. They're all bent out of shape that I was saying this, but they really couldn't say audible obscenity, you know, pits of the world. So that they were sort of stuck. But then at a certain point, people were getting on me more, somewhat deservedly so. And I crossed that line. And particularly when you have kids, you're thinking, this doesn't seem so good anymore. And I'd like to be able to stop this and sort of focus my energies on the court in a different way. And I wasn't real successful at that.
By the way, I'm sorry to hear the loss of your dad, who
Thank
was
you.
You know, a big part of
that.
Your life. For us Long Islanders, this was a big story, you know, coming out of New York, Port Washington, these places where you played. You know, this is your second memoir, so we see how it's followed you into your life. You bring in your wife, the rock star Patti Smyth, for some guest commentating, and she says that her take is that when you went into a crazed, you know, yelling rage on the court, you were standing up for yourself against authority. And people loved it because you were doing it maybe even for them, for those who couldn't stand up to authority.
Mm-hmm.
Although she did say, It's not like she's saying you are the Jesus of anger. That is just the best. I mean, it wasn't.
She's a great writer.
We don't want to give the wrong impression here. You still have very strong opinions. Bathroom breaks, you hate them, not off the court. during games.
I better not hate them off the court now at my age.
Maria Sharapova's grunts, double play. Boy, that got you in a lot of hot water with the Bryan brothers.
Well, that's okay.
You think doubles is what should just get rid of it?
I would say that I am open for discussion. I mean, this comes from someone who had a lot of success in doubles and played more doubles than any singles player in the last 30 to 40 years. So it's coming from a place of love for the sport and wanting to see the sport flourish. And I just don't know if watching doubles, in my opinion, which seems to be on life support, is the way to go. That's one of the problems with tennis. They never change anything. Mm-hmm. We had Davis Cup, which was his, where you represent your country, which I was extremely proud to do. And no one knows it, how many times I won Davis Cup from my country. Barely anyone knows what Davis Cup is. Mm-hmm. You probably don't even know
what
it
is. Team play. Yes, I do.
Yes, good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. But the point is that nowadays you don't hear anyone talk about that. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that we need to try. Even prove me wrong. You know, start your own circuit in doubles. And people say, oh, we love to watch doubles on TV. Really? Check the ratings. And I don't fault the Bryan brothers. I mean, they've almost, as a team, single-handedly kept it going.
These are the identical twins, you know, people love.
The identical twins. I mean, you know, name me another doubles team.
Okay.
Exactly.
Serena and some people.
Serena and Venus.
Okay. I want you to weigh in on a recent controversy that you have a strong opinion about. This is 74-year-old Australian tennis great Margaret Court, who said this.
Tennis is full of lesbians, because even when I was playing, there was only a couple there, but those couple that led that took young ones into parties and things. And it's a whole plot in our nation and in the nations of the world to get the minds of the children.
Well, Martina Navratilova came out after that. I think Billie Jean King did as well, and said that the Margaret Court Arena in Australia should be renamed. You did a Eurosport video, kind of like a YouTube, in mm-hmm. which you know, went out of your way to say how much you supported same-sex marriage, and then who the blank cares whether or not there are lesbians in the sport. And then you added this about removing Margaret Court's name.
Keep the name. And when same-sex marriage becomes legal in Australia, I will personally call my good friend Elton John to host the biggest same-sex mass wedding ceremony ever seen in Margaret Court Arena. Margaret, that's just the kind of guy I am.
I love that. I mean, that to me, you got to have a sense of humor with it, because obviously it's some of these topics, such as this one, people have very strong feelings and it's extremely serious to them. But I'm actually the self-appointed commissioner of tennis when I do those Eurosport things. So I have fun doing it. But actually, I've gotten more response from that than anything I've said or done in 10 years. Mainly very supportive and appreciative.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it.
John McEnroe, what a life. You are an unbelievable name dropper, and I might be too.
No, I'm not. Only a little bit.
Oh, come on.
I just had to do a little bit.
So there you were with Robert De Niro talking about your art collections, or with Roger Waters, you know, playing golf, or, oh, look, Paul McCartney.
That's a tough life.
Do you ever think, what the heck?
When you mentioned a couple of those names, I literally got goosebumps, and the answer to your question is it's still unbelievable. To me, it's moving forward. How will I handle it in a way if that doesn't keep happening? I can't believe my good fortune in that way. I'm sitting there and, you know, Paul McCartney says, oh, man, I love your commentary at Wimbledon. Paul McCartney? I mean, you can't even believe that you're sitting there, and it's inspiring.
Mm. Well, you mentioned how do I go forward. You've said you want to be the Rolling Stones of the seniors tour. You know, kind of like...
I've been doing that for years. I'm, you know, 58 for a tennis player is about 75 for a rock star.
Well, and your dear friends, the Rolling Stones...
And they're not spring chickens either.
Right. Well, you know, there's some reflection on the bad boy portion of your life. And so I'm just going to give you the opportunity here. I mentioned the tennis guy. You were playing the seniors at Amagansett on New York's Long Island about 10 years ago. And you had a bit of an explosion. And he's the guy in the stands who yelled out, because he's just such a supporter, "Come on, John." And you turned on him. You tried. There were F-bombs.
Let me guess.
There was an A-bomb. So if you'd like to apologize.
I apologize. It was hot that particular day. It was about 100 degrees and a lot of humidity, and I let things start to get to me. And when you were actually being supportive and trying to be helpful, even though I felt like you weren't being helpful at that moment, it would have been better if you just kept quiet. I shouldn't have gone as far as I did, so I hope humbly you accept my apology.
Come on, John.
No one's perfect.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
All right.
Bye. John McEnroe, his newest memoir, But Seriously. We spoke to him before his newest controversy, saying Serena Williams couldn't compete with the top male tennis players. If you want to weigh in on that or see his video defending lesbians in tennis, or if you yourself want to defend doubles play, go to hearnow.org.